parking in select cities.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, we're going to talk about the Republican tax plan today. We'll talk with the spokesperson for the Republican National Committee in just a moment. Yesterday, the House in Washington passed the Republican tax plan. Now it moves on to the U.S. Senate. For weeks, pro-tax plan ads have been running on television networks across the country. Here's an ad that's been running in Ohio. It's from the conservative group American Action Network.
I was proud of my job. I was middle class, and it meant a better life for my daughter. But with more foreign competition, I got laid off. America's tax code is so complicated, we can't be as competitive. Thousands of jobs like mine are lost to places like China. So when I see Congress working to cut taxes for working families and bring jobs back, I know how that matters. Tell Congressman Eric Paulson, keep fighting for tax reforms that bring the middle class back.
That's an ad. Similar ads have been running across the country for the last 4 weeks. Last night at a Senate hearing on the Republican tax bill, there was this exchange between Democrat Sherrod Brown of Ohio and Republican Orrin Hatch of Utah.
Groups will run, will of course say, Senator McCaskill and Senator Casey and Senator Stabenow and Senator Nelson are voting against a $4,000 raise that this tax cut is going to bestow on them. We know it's coming. We know you'll have way more money to promote that than we will have to defend it. But that's why the Wyden Amendment is so important. And I just think it would be nice just tonight, before we go home, to just acknowledge, well, this tax cut really is not for the middle class, it's for the rich. And that whole thing about higher wages, well, it's a good selling point. But we know companies don't just give away higher wages. They just don't give away higher wages just because they have more money. Corporations are sitting on a lot of money now. They're sitting on a lot of profits now. I don't see wages going up. So just spare us the bank shots, spare us the sarcasm move. And the let's satire. Move. And
I'm
let's
gonna
move.
Spare it, let's but move. I'm going to just say to you that I come from the poor people, and I've been here working my whole stinking career for people who don't have a chance, and I really resent anybody saying that I'm just doing this for the rich. Give me a break. I think you guys overplay that all the time, and it gets old, and well, frankly, you ought to quit it.
Mr. Chairman, the public
wait a minute, just I'm not through.
Okay.
I get kind of sick and tired of it. Well, true, it's a nice political play.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
not true.
With all due respect, I get sick and tired of the richest people.
Regular order,
country,
Mr. Chairman.
Getting richer and
regular
richer.
Order.
Richer.
Order.
Regular middle, we do a tax
cut. Regular order.
Middle class.
Wait a minute. Regular
over
order.
And over and over
wait,
again.
Wait just
how many
a
times do we do this before we learn this, Mr. Chairman?
Listen, I've honored you by allowing you to spout off here. And what you said was not right. That's all I'm saying. I come from the lower middle class originally. We didn't have anything. So don't spew that stuff on me. I get a little tired of that crap. And let me just say something. If we worked together, we could pull this country out of every mess it's in. And we could do a lot of the things that you're talking about, too. And I think I've got a reputation of having worked together with Democrats.
Let's start with Chip.
Not starting with Chip. I did it. I've done it for years. I've got more bills.
Start with Chip today.
I got more bills passed than everybody on this committee put together. And they've been passed for the benefit of people in this country. Now, all I can say is I like you personally very much, but I'm telling you, this bull crap that you guys throw out here really gets old after a while. To do it right at the end of this was just not right. And it takes a lot to get me worked up like this.
Call the roll.
Well, that was a tense exchange yesterday in a Senate hearing where Republican Orrin Hatch was responding to Democrat Sherrod Brown of Ohio. We're joined now by the National Press Secretary for the Republican National Committee. She's Cassie Smedeal. And Cassie, did I pronounce your name right?
Well, it's a pronunciation I've heard before, but it's Smedley.
Smedley, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Kathy Smedley, thank you very much for coming on. Is it that tense there in Washington these days?
Well, I think tense, but in the right way. It's very passionate, if that's it, if that's the better word for it, because people are really committed and motivated to getting this done for the American people. And also, I take the chairman's point. It's a tired, old talking point that the Democrats always roll out in any of these situations before they ever see bill text. You can anticipate exactly what they're going to say. And, it's quite the opposite from what this tax reform package looks like. It really keeps the middle class as the central tenant and the central benefactors of this tax reform plan. And it's, I certainly empathize with the chairman that it just gets old after a while that you constantly have to beat back against those illegitimate claims.
So to whom do most of the benefits of the tax cuts go? Do they go to the rich or do they go to the middle class?
They absolutely go to the middle class. You know, this is something that the president campaigned on. He has since gone out into the country in all of these rallies doing for tax reform. In many instances, we have seen Democrats either with the president or say on their own that they support tax reform. And here we are in Congress working the will of the American people to get this done. And one thing that I think is great about this entire process is that they have always kept the middle class at the core of it. And much to the dismay of some of the special interests around town, they have not been able to weasel their way in ways that they thought or hoped they might be able to.
What's the actual number in terms of billions of dollars saved by the middle class and billions of dollars saved by the rich? What's the ratio?
Well, I don't have that number for you, but I think the important thing to look at is that you could almost say it's, I don't want to say limitless, but it remains to be seen because it's not a question of how much will be saved or if anything will be saved, but just how much will be saved. And we'll see that with GDP growth. We'll see that when you lower the corporate tax rate, that has a great effect on all of the businesses that then can come back and put jobs in our communities. And those aren't just any old jobs to check the box. Those are good paying wages, which then, of course, translates into more investment in the economy because people will have more money to spend on the things that they want to spend it on. And I think that's an important point too that we haven't had the chance to make in a long time, that for a long time we talked a lot about people wanting to hoard their pennies because you didn't know what tomorrow was going to look like. And now that we're talking about how big will your tax cut be and how much will you be able to reinvest and will you be able to make those upgrades to your home or go on the family vacation that you haven't been able to plan for nearly a decade, those are some really great conversations to be having, and just the mood of the nation, I think, is lifted by the sheer fact that people can start to daydream and plan a little bit again.
We're talking with Cassie Smedley, who is the National Press Secretary for the Republican National Committee, about the Republican tax plan that's making its way to the U.S. Senate, and sometime in the next few weeks it'll be voted on. So, Cassie, with the stock market being up for the last 9 years, why do corporations need a tax cut now?
Well, the stock market is up because right now at this unprecedented amount that it is because people are anticipating what this tax reform is going to do. And what we've seen and what we talk about all too often are companies going overseas because they just can't compete here. It doesn't make sense for them to compete here. It's not a lack of wanting to hire American workers. It's just that they can't hire American workers and have a company. And so it's so important that we're lowering this corporate tax rate while also closing some loopholes, by the way. So it's not all fun and games for them, but we're lowering their corporate tax rate, which incentivizes them to bring their business and back to the United States and hire American workers who we know are the best and the brightest in the world. And that is a great sign for where our economy is going to continue to go. And it's just amazing what you've seen people's, optimism just on the sheer idea that we're talking about this. We haven't been able to talk about that in a while. We sort of just forfeited this notion that we'd be able to bring these businesses back for the past 8 years. And now the president and the Republican-led Congress are reclaiming it, saying, no, this is where these jobs deserve to be, and we're going to bring them back.
You talk about the optimism of the stock market. The stock market's been going up for 9 years. So was it optimistic 7 years ago that Trump would win and there would be these tax cuts? I mean, what led to the optimism 9 years ago?
I'm not sure that I follow you. I don't know that we've seen
the stock market has gone up continuously for the last 9 years. And so if you're saying that the stock market is going up because of the optimism over tax cuts, how do you explain the optimism before President Trump was elected?
Well, I don't recall seeing any benefit to my personal, albeit very small, little stock portfolio in the way that it has benefited over this last year. The fact that we've had, since President Trump was elected, 5,000 if not 6,000 point gains, that's pretty unprecedented versus this sort of drip, drip, drip increase that you might be talking about.
It went up about 16,000 points over the last 9 years.
Right, but then we've had, just in this last, not even full year, we had 5,000 point gains, and you really can't compare the what people have been able to do to try and move the economy on their own, because there hasn't been any overarching help for them. That's just by people's sheer will, I would say, and the momentum that people are feeling now that they have a pro-business president back in office, and not just pro-big business, pro-all American businesses. And you see that these small communities like the ones that I come from, there's a lot of optimism about what's possible, as opposed to people fearing being the next business to have to shutter their doors.
Cassie, what's the guarantee that the tax savings that these corporations will have? Apple is sitting on something like $250 billion. What's the guarantee that the tax savings that they will have will be returned to the U.S. and that the money won't go to the shareholders, the money will go to the workers at the company? What's the guarantee in this bill?
Well, as a free market conservative, I think we can step outside of this bill and say that I believe that markets will demand that R&D. Markets will demand that you create these jobs, because there will be such a demand for the product, right? And so they will have to put it back in. And we've also seen that businesses, again, despite the, you know, to the contrary of what the government tries to do, and they don't do anything to help them, businesses do a lot to invest in their companies, expand their companies, create jobs. They are often anchors of communities. So I do think that a lot of that will naturally happen. But I think, in particular, showing that the United States is once again a place that welcomes American businesses and not a place that just feeds them offshoring to other countries, that in and of itself will bring with it a lot of new opportunity and reinvestment.
To what extent do you think that those companies are moving offshore to find lower wages and fewer environmental regulations?
I think we've seen that to a great extent, because it simply hasn't been competitive. I mean, I was talking with a man just a few months ago who manufactures hats, and he says, do you know how difficult it is to find a made in the USA hat? And I go to great lengths to do it, and people are willing to pay the extra $5 because it means something to have something made here in the USA. We don't see that enough. But businesses, I mean, as much as we can, you know, make them out to be the bad guy for going overseas, the way that the tax climate has been, do you blame them? And so now that we are rolling that back, we're lowering the corporate tax rate, we're incentivizing them to come over here, put those jobs here, put those good paying jobs here. And I think they're willing to do it. And again, the American people reward that type of those efforts, those models.
But you said that there's no guarantee that you trust the free market system. We saw tax cuts during President Bush's years in office, and the middle class continued to shrink there. In fact, the shrinking of the middle class has gone back way back to 1980, and we've had a lot of tax cuts since 1980, but the middle class hasn't grown. Why do you think adding another layer of tax cuts will grow the middle class when it hasn't worked in the past?
Well, I think this is the exact right time to add tax cuts, because in the past we do them when the economy's not doing so hot, right? We do it as a boost to the economy. But now, and I look back, you know, you say the Bush tax cuts, but I look back to the stimulus plan where everybody got a check and the idea was that you were supposed to go out and spend it on something to stimulate the economy. And in fact, that didn't really happen, at least not in the overwhelming way that they thought, because people held on to that money because they didn't know what tomorrow would bring. And they felt like that extra $800 or $1,600 was something that they really needed to hold close. Versus right now, when we talk about that optimism in the stock market, people are saying, I'm going to take that tax cut and I'm going to put it towards something, whether that's the repairs on the house that I haven't been able to make, or taking my family out to dinner, or perhaps saving up for a vacation that we haven't been able to take. I mean, for so long, everything has been against the American people, right? Gas prices were too high. The stock, contrary to what we were talking, we can disagree on this, but like, the stock market wasn't doing well. Businesses were shuttering their doors. You didn't know what tomorrow was going to look like. And instead, now there is that renewed optimism. And this is the time to let people keep more of their hard-earned money so that they can choose how to reinvest it.
But if it has, I'm sorry, if it hasn't worked in the past, why would it work now?
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying, is that you've got a whole different set of optimism with the American people right now. I mean, oftentimes you give people a tax cut in their time of need as opposed to their time right now. What we're seeing is a time of great want and will to do more and to invest and reinvest. And that's a completely different set of circumstances than we've been dealing with over the past decade or so.
We're talking with Cassie Smedley, who is the National Press Secretary for the Republican National Committee, and you're listening to a live interview on 88.5 FM. When you add in the interest on the money borrowed for this tax bill, it will add $2.3 trillion to the national debt. Why is adding to the national debt at this time when there's a lot of deficit hawks out there, including most of the Republican Party, but the Republicans are going to add $2.3 trillion to the national debt over the next 10 years. Why is that a good idea now?
Well, I worked on Capitol Hill for about 10 years, but I can tell you that I watched a lot of bills go through that added to the debt and deficit, and of course the interest on the debt, in which case we would say, I wonder whatever happened to that. What was our return on investment? You know, one thing that government's not good at doing is measuring the effects of things. There's a lot of studies, but very rarely do we go back and make necessary changes to make sure things are as effective as possible. One thing that you get out of this is a return on investment. And that is why the projections, if you take it back, for example, to the Reagan tax cuts, for the 8 of 10 years after they were implemented, we saw robust growth, and we saw not adding to the deficit, but in fact a surplus of spending. And so I think that, or of savings, sorry. And so I think that's what we can plan to see here as well. And this is far different from all of the other government projects that we see and fund and add to the debt and deficit. This is a return on investment, and it's courtesy of people being able to keep more of their money and invest it how they would like to invest it. And again, as a free market conservative, I believe in the power of the people and the market to do better, more responsible things with their money than the government.
You know, I think you're so right about measuring the effects of things. Government doesn't do a good job of measuring the effects of things. These tax cuts are permanent for corporations. They're not permanent for families or for individuals. Why not make the tax cuts, just like the tax cuts for the families and individuals, and if they don't work, if Apple doesn't bring that $260 billion back to the U.S. and repatriate it, why not just increase the corporate tax the next year if they don't invest in worker pay, as you're suggesting the free market will make it happen? If worker pay doesn't go up, then why not just reinstitute the old system based on, you know, measurements from year to year?
Well, I agree with you that I think it's very important that we continue to investigate and measure, and that it is incumbent upon the government to analyze the effects of these things. But I would say another way, you know, everybody keeps talking about one's permanent, one's not. A lot of that had to do with the Senate's rules and how they could get these things through. But as we saw with the extension of the Bush tax cuts back in, 2013, Congress will extend them. We fully anticipate that the American people can expect that this will be an ongoing tax cut. And so,
But how can we expect it? But why not make the corporate tax cuts not permanent? They're permanent in your bill. Mm-hmm. But why not make them not permanent? And if they meet certain benchmarks, measurements, if they get performance goals met, then you can increase the tax, or you can keep the tax cut. But if they don't return that money that gets into workers' hands, like that guy in Ohio that we heard in the ad, if he doesn't get a job and if he doesn't get paid well, then you take away the corporate tax breaks.
Well, I think, actually, I think from your mouth to the tax writer's ears, maybe that's something that they can work on.
You think they'll do that?
Well, they've got a conference to get to.
Cassie, you know Washington. You know that's not going to happen. So please, please don't try to snow us.
I'm not here as a representative of the Tax Writing Committee, but I can tell you, you know, what's in the bill now. But also, what I agree with you in the sense of measuring.
Aren't permanent tax cuts a bad idea for corporations, because there's no guarantee that money's going to get into the hands of families here in Florida or families in Ohio?
Well, I think there is plenty of incentive for corporations to do right with this money, and they have said as much that they will, and they have plans that they would if they could, which they have never been able to institute because we've had such a horrible atmosphere for corporations to do business in the United States. And, you know, we talk about corporate tax cuts, but these are really just general business tax cuts, and our environment is very unfriendly to businesses generally, small businesses to, you know, Fortune 50 businesses. And so we need to allow them to do the right thing. We've never really, or at least certainly not in my lifetime, given them the chance to do what they've always said they would do if given the chance. So rather than take your sort of pessimistic side of things, I'm choosing the optimistic side because we've never given them the chance.
All right. Well, Cassie, there's so much I want to ask you. There's going to be the elimination of the medical expense deduction for about 630,000 Floridians, the student loan interest deduction that helps make education affordable for more than 570,000 Floridians is going to be eliminated. There's going to be $25 billion in Medicare cuts. Some families on Social Security who are paying $350 this year in taxes here in Florida are now, their taxes are going to go up under your plan, under the Republican plan, to $1,700 a year. For the average family that relies on the medical expense deduction or the student loan interest deduction or Medicare, why is this a good idea?
Well, I think it's important to note that the eliminations you're talking about were in the House plan, but they are not in the Senate plan, and so that's why it's good that we have a conference committee. And I think there's different reasons, because one thing that both plans really emphasize is that by nearly doubling, or in fact doubling as the Senate plan does, this standard deduction, you're going to be able to, right off the top, not have to claim any exemptions at all. You are going to be able to keep more of that money and not be taxed on your first $12,000 or $24,000 if you're married of income. You shouldn't have to rely on a deduction to be able to keep more of your money. That should just be baked into our system. And I think that's really the underlying point of this entire process, is that for too long, it's, well, if you can claim this deduction or if you can claim this credit, then you'll be okay. As opposed to saying, we don't think that you should have to sort of line up your life to be able to claim as many tax deductions as possible. We're just going to give you those right off the top. And I do take some point with folks that if you are in that lower income threshold, you actually stand to benefit the most from this tax plan. So there have, I know, been some arguments made that that's not the case, but they've been debunked. And in fact, I was just reading one today from Forbes that went out of its way to show tables and prove how that is not the case, that if you are at the lower income, that you will unnecessarily be penalized from this plan. That's not the case at all.
You know, I'll have to look at that article, and I got to admit, I haven't read it yet.
I'll send it to you.
I would be happy to see it. I'm happy to read it. One of the complaints, too, is that the tax breaks for lower and middle income families happened in the first year or two, but that over the life of this tax cut bill, their taxes tend to go up. What would you say to them?
I'm not following you.
Over time, people at the low and middle income part of the spectrum are going to see their taxes go up under this bill.
I have not heard that. One thing that I can think to that extent, because I actually would be would fall into this eventually if I continue to reach for my goals in my career, but that would only happen potentially if you if your income jumped by that much, which is to say that, and even then, as I was doing the tax calculator, you still proportionately, it wouldn't be that big of a change for you. But that's if you experience a big increase in your income. The line at which you move up to that next tax bracket, it's pretty high. You've got to be, you are no longer low, or really even at least not from where I'm from, middle class. You're pretty comfortable.
And I'm sorry, I don't have the article in front of me, but what I will do is I will email it to you.
Thank you.
Cassie Smedley is our guest, and she is the National Press Secretary for the Republican National Committee in Washington, D.C. Where are you from originally?
Gladstone, Missouri. It's just outside of Kansas City.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Small town. I want to ask you one more question, and that is about the Affordable Care Act. In the Senate version of the bill, they plan to repeal the individual mandate. Now, the critics in the Democratic Party say that this would increase Americans' health care premiums and cause 13 million Americans to go uninsured. And then you've got a whole group of people and organizations like the American Medical Association, the American Hospital Association, the American Academy of Family Physicians, Americans Health Insurance Plans, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Federation of American Hospitals, all warning this would be disastrous. Why is it a good idea to repeal the individual mandate?
Well, I think, you know, what Chuck Schumer and others have tried to assert is that you're kicking people off healthcare, and that's not the case at all. One of the big problems with the mandate is that it mandates people to get healthcare they can't use and or can't afford. And what we've actually seen is that you have a far greater number of people than was ever projected voluntarily taking the penalty because they say that that health insurance, quote unquote, that they're getting is not worth it. It's not giving them care. And so what this does is it removes that penalty. And we're talking about people voluntarily not getting off of getting out of Obamacare. And those are the folks that you hear about all across the country who have had their premiums increased by some cases 140% or more. And it's not fair to them that they would have to, that mandate would continue for them to purchase health care or a health insurance plan that doesn't give them health care. And in some cases, it's causing them to completely upend how they live their lives just to be able to afford it.
Would you say that most Americans are upset with the Affordable Care Act?
Certainly. And as somebody who, until very recently, was on Obamacare, I can tell you that I am one of those people who had to change my doctor, had to pay more for less care.
Did you ever go through a health insurance change plan before? I don't know how long you've been working, but I've been working for 40 years. And every 2 or 3 years, I always went through a health insurance change before Obamacare. And we had to change doctors then. That's just the nature of our system.
But it's not endemic
to Obamacare. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, but no, I think that's a good point because prior to it, those things would happen. But to your point, you got on a different plan, and yes, maybe you had to change doctors, but you still had coverage. I was just recently working for a congressman in Northwest Wisconsin, and they were part of 18 square miles, and they had one plan option, and that's what too many people are facing. So they opt out of Obamacare, are willing to pay the tax, just so they can then go and buy a non-Obamacare plan, which is far more expensive and, of course, not eligible for any subsidies, but at least they're able to get some care. I think that for many Americans, changing doctors is the least of their concerns. Just having a doctor that takes the plan within an hour of where they live is a far greater concern. And we, you know, somehow along the way, people forgot just how bad Obamacare is. It got twisted up, and I'm not saying that that's not some of that is the Republicans' fault for not being able to get that repeal through, and they allowed Democrats to change that narrative. But this is still a really bad law that's inadvertently or otherwise negatively affecting a lot of Americans. And so to take it back to the tax reform plan, it's not a bad thing to repeal that mandate. And let people voluntarily choose to go elsewhere.
So we go back to what it was before Obamacare. We would go back and take away all the protections of Obamacare. Because basically what you're doing is, by repealing the mandate, the individual mandate, you're sabotaging Obamacare. And so that means that the system now is going to collapse. So we're going to go back. You want to go back to what it was before. Do you think it was better before Obamacare?
Well, you already have millions of people who are voluntarily getting off of Obamacare because it wasn't giving them any, you know, measurable amount of care that they needed, and paying that tax, that couple thousand bucks, depending on who you are or
the
how
polls,
your household.
That wasn't anticipated either.
So I think that right there is the American people.
I don't want to argue with you, but the polls show that Obamacare is more popular than ever. And here in Florida, more people are signing up in bigger numbers than ever before. I mean, the people are really, you know, embracing Obamacare, and the polls show that the country likes it.
Well, I think that's pretty debatable because certainly Obamacare was not popular as of a year ago. I think that has a lot to do with the fact
that... Well, I can show you that poll, but that poll is pretty easy to find.
I've seen that, but there are several other polls that would say otherwise. And the other side of that is that Congress needs to get a repeal done because there's an uncertainty factor there that I think is playing into.
We'll go back to that era where 50 million Americans had no health insurance and there was no protection if you have pre-existing conditions and children couldn't really extend their stay on their parents' health care plan. And we'll go back to that time.
Why not? Well, but if I may, why not, instead of, you know, one of the things that I think was a problem with Obamacare is that instead of focusing on the 15% of the country that didn't have access to health care, we tried to overhaul the system for everyone, whereas there were still a lot of people. And I agree with you, as does the Republican Congress, and as does virtually every single person who has their hand in changing this law or working on health care, that we need to protect pre-existing conditions. That's never not been on the table. And I think that's really important to throw that out there and make sure people realize that, because that's a falsehood that's often claimed. But why didn't we focus on the 15% of Americans who didn't have access to affordable health care? That was a really agreeable effort that a lot of people wanted to tackle. And instead, it was a backdoor way of getting socialized medicine into the country.
Why didn't the Republicans do that? I mean, the Republicans have majorities in both the Senate and the House. And why didn't they do that this year?
Right now, well, the problem is that you've got a really bad, complicated law, and as I like to describe it to folks, you know, it's almost like a game of Jenga. You can't just pull out all of the pieces that aren't working and be left with a tower that can stand. That's going to make everything collapse. And so instead, you have to figure out how you're going to more methodically fix this. And that is a much harder task to do. It's much easier to build a bad law on a faulty foundation than it is to repair the building. And that's what we're faced against. And I think what you saw in this process, however unsuccessful it ultimately was, at least at this point, is you saw a lot of people trying to be very methodical about how to do this and do it in a way that did not unintentionally hinder people any more than they already have been. And it's just a really hard thing to do. It was a lot easier when Barack Obama used and Nancy Pelosi used all the political capital that ended up costing them their majorities to force this law, this bill, which became law, down people's throats. It's a lot harder when you go through, and as we were talking about earlier, when you reassess, is this working? What parts of it aren't working? How can we fix that to make that better for the American people? That's really hard to do when you have a law that has such a faulty structure and foundation.
Well, Cassie Smedley, thank you so much for coming on WMNF. Great to have you here. I hope you'll come back.
Yeah, great to talk with you. Have a nice weekend.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. That's Cassie Smedley, who is the National Press Secretary for the Republican National Committee in Washington, D.C. Okay, you've heard the argument in favor of the tax cuts. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. At the beginning of the show, we heard an ad that was touting the tax plan, and we also heard a pretty tough discussion between Senators Orrin Hatch and Sherrod Brown in the Senate yesterday in a committee hearing. Right now, we're going to hear from Democratic Congressman Tim Ryan, who yesterday was on the losing side of the vote. This is what he said about the Republican tax plan that was making its way through the House and was eventually passed.
The last time there was tax reform, it was 31 years ago. Since then, 96% of income growth went to the top 10% of the people in the country. 96% went to the top 10%. The top 1% control 90% of the wealth in this country. 63% of average families in the United States of America could not withstand a $500 emergency. We have pensions collapsing. We have communities that have eroded, wiped out. And the Republican plan to fix all of this is to go to the Chinese government, borrow $2.3 trillion, and bring it back to the United States and give it to the wealthiest people in this country. Now, that is not going to fix a damn thing in the United States. It's not going to help Flint. It's not going to help Springfield. It's not going to help Youngstown or Pittsburgh or Gary. I'm talking about Gary, Indiana. We'll get hammered from this thing. And we have tried this before, and many of you were here. President Bush did this. Say, we're going to cut taxes for the wealthy. It's going to lead to growth. Wages are going to go up. We had the most stagnant Great Depression, and it ended in a complete economic collapse. This is a canard. This economic philosophy stinks. It doesn't work, and it hammers working class people. And to put a little salt in the wound, Mr. Speaker, Madam Speaker, to put a little salt in the wound, you keep the deduction that allows a corporation to outsource jobs from our communities to other countries. The only place this bill is going to create a job, the only place this bill is going to create a job is in Beijing, China. I yield back the balance of my time.
Congressman Tim Ryan on the floor of the House yesterday debating the tax bill. Well, we've heard from several different angles on this tax bill. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And this email was one of the first ones in. Scott in Gulfport writes, of course, Ms. Smedley doesn't have the numbers. When you asked her about who would get more from this tax cut, the billionaires of the middle class, we tried that old rhetoric. Ms. Smedley is playing the spin game for corporate lobbyists who rally for the super rich. As usual, I'm not convinced at all. Too much spin from the right. It's just exhausting, writes Scott in Gulfport. What's your take on this? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Sam in Seminole. Hi, Sam. You're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Good morning. This is a great show. First of all, I agree with the previous, with the person who sent the email in, and I also agree with Congressman Tim Ryan. I think he's right on point with that. But it's interesting that Ms. Smedley never mentioned the wealthy in this whole discussion. She never mentioned how they were going to benefit and how that permanent tax deduction benefits the corporations. She never mentioned that. So that kind of puzzles me. And as far as the Affordable Care Act goes, nobody ever mentions, Rob, that for 6 years, the Republicans could have tweaked the Affordable Care Act to get rid of all the issues that it supposedly has now, and they didn't do anything. They didn't do one thing. They just let it sit there and just let, like an apple on a tree, just sit there and just let it rot until it fell off the tree, supposedly. And also, I'm in the medical profession, Rob. I see people every day. I've come across very few people who ever complain about the Affordable Care Act. Very few, if any. So I don't know who these people are that she's talking about. And the last thing I just want to say is that the Affordable Care Act probably could have worked if Congress, for 6 years, the Republican Congress would have got off their butt and done something, and there wasn't so much insurance industry greed.
All right, Sam.
Sam,
thanks a lot. All right, great to hear from you. Very cogent comments. Whether you agree or disagree, I think Sam made a lot of great points. 813-239-9663. What did you think also of the interview with the spokesperson for the Republican National Committee? Here's a comment from Ron in West Tampa. He says, your RNC guests, without seeing me, must think that I have the word gullible stamped on my forehead. The same tired testimony crying about the poor corporations paying too much taxes. Didn't we start this trickle-down game under Reagan and Bush? Hasn't wealth been accumulating in fewer and fewer hands over the last few years? So how are businesses hurting? Writes Ron. Marty says this, ask her when the factories will open the U.S., where can I get a job making iPhones? I was a factory worker who lost my job years ago. After the Bush tax cuts in the early 2000s, I lost my job in Tampa along with 350 other people when the Delta maintenance hangar closed. She does lie very well, though, writes Marty. That's Marty's opinion out there. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to John in Bradenton. Hey, John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, I agree. I'm surprised she didn't know about what you spoke to about in 10 years. It retreats back to higher pay for those, and it was clearly made, the point was made, not only by Congress spokesman yesterday, but on CBS this morning. It's $75,000 to $150,000. It goes back, and the only assurance he spoke of, saying that he was quite sure that Congress would vote to continue that at that point. So he must be clairvoyant to a point. point. And as far as Obamacare, it was built as an organic instrument to tweak. It was born to tweak. You can't move from a $2 trillion industry where about 40% of it is being pulled out for costs and profits by the insurance companies to a one-payer sort of system. And so what it was they knew that that was the avenue by which they would destroy that. And as far as I wonder if she wants to go back to where in 06 we had CEOs like United, the largest, pulling in hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Hundreds, virtually, when there was three in a row, so much that Congress had to do the largest clawback of individuals and pull some of their, they were given, one president, one CEO, gave himself $700 million as he cashed in on his, back to $400 million.
Yeah, just listening to Cassie, I'm just not convinced that if you give corporations tax cuts, that that money is automatically going to end up in the pockets of middle-class families or workers. I just, listening to her, I got to say, I was not convinced by her argument. There was a lot of hope, and I understand optimism. But
well, Wolf made the point yesterday, the other day, he said that out of the Dow, the 37 or 38 companies, industries that make up the Dow, only one paid the 35%. And I'll leave with this: the 1,222 page tax code instrument by which Washington is produced. Everything that you and I and a lot anybody under that $75,000 mark has to read is in the first 27 pages.
Yeah,
that has contributed to the industries to give them holes to squeeze through. And thank you very much.
All right, John, thank you. Thank you for your comments. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. And we're just getting the pulse of the community on the tax cut plan. Let's go to Gary. Gary, you're on. What would you like to say?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for putting together in your first 33 minutes of your show a better 360-degree exploration of this topic than I've heard in any other media. Secondly, like one of your emailers and some of your callers have said, that Republican lady and people like Orrin Hatch, they must really think that the American people are just plain stupid and aren't going to trust the evidence of their own experience. I've been working for almost four decades, and with one exception, every employer I've ever had has been out to make maximum profits, and that included squeezing the workers to work harder for as little pay and benefits as the employers could give me. Every employer that was major was going to see if they could move their facilities and other things overseas where they could pay people less and have less costs due to environmental regulations. These Republican people want us to also ignore the fact that the Republican Party is getting huge ownership from the 1% elites like the Koch brothers and the Mercers, and they expect us to believe that corporations and rich people are altruistic and actually care about the welfare of their workers in the middle class, and that if we give them more and more money, they're going to give it back to us. That's never happened.
Gary, I want to move on to another call, but let me ask you real quickly. Do you have faith that once these corporations that are so heavily invested overseas get these tax breaks, that they're going to bring good-paying jobs back to America? Are you convinced by what Smedley said?
Of course not, and we all know that profit is what it's all about, and they're not going to help us at all. They're only going to help their shareholders and their top management.
All right, great. Gary, thanks a lot. Thanks for
your
comments.
Man.
All right, so if you disagree with anything you've heard here or agree, call us up, 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Essentially just reading the emails as they've come in and taking the phone calls as they've come in. Let's go to Ted, who's in Elfers. Hi, Ted. You're on. What would you like to say?
Rob, great show, as always. I'm a former Republican, a Marine Corps veteran. I grew up in a conservative household. I left the Republican Party years ago. And I think it's the same old rhetoric that we're hearing time and time again. It's like I'm sitting watching Reagan and his advisors on TV telling us that trickle-down will work, that if we spend the money to the top, that they're going to return it. And the evidence has shown that that's not going to work. I'm never surprised by the number of people that call in to this show and express the heartache over what's happening to this nation, this great nation of ours. And I think it's time that we all stand up and elect representatives that are going to do the right thing, people that are in it for others and not for themselves. There has to be a strong progressive movement, an increase in the strong progressive movement in this nation, and the American people have to take this country back by telling those in power that they no longer can control the majority of the population with the money and the laws. You know, you see it everywhere. You see it in every branch of the system. And it's, you know, when the Republican, I hear callers call in and say that, you know, people always think, Republicans always think that the people of this nation are gullible. Well, look at the election results. There's obviously a faction of the American citizenry that will believe whatever they're told and vote against their interests. And I'm entirely sure that the Republicans are surprised by that. I think they rely on that.
Let me ask you.
Those that are educated to stand up and vote back.
Let me ask you a quick question. She said that this time, trickle down, the tax cuts for the wealthy, this time it's going to work. And I think she tacitly admitted it didn't work in the past. She didn't come out and say that. But this time, do you think they're going to work?
No, I don't, yeah, Rob. Yeah. Honestly, I don't. You know, it's just like I didn't believe my father the first time he said he stopped cheating on my mother. Mm. You know, when the evidence is there, the evidence is there. Until you prove to me that it's different, I'm going to assume that it's going to be the same. I think it's time, like I said, for the American people to stand up and say, you've had your opportunity. You've had your chance. You're done. We have to enact term limits for Congress. We have to enact a people's party, a third party, because both parties have shown that they're willing to go to the right to support big business, to support the 1%. It's time for the people to take back America. Thank you so much, Ted. I'm going to get off.
Thanks, Ted. Yeah, we've got a full board. Gina writes this, your guest is wrong. Historically, these type of corporate tax cuts do nothing to inspire expansion, and it takes more money from those who can least afford it. David writes this, I fear that Trump will ultimately destabilize the stock markets due to uncertainty over the Trump foreign policy and the resulting chaos. What does your guest think? Also, does she expect more Republican lawmakers to speak out against Trump like Senator Flake did recently? I think she would say... pretty sure she would say that she doesn't expect more Republicans to speak out. Adam writes this, this woman is delusional as usual. When you pointed out the stock market has been going up for the past 9 years, she has no answer for that. If we worked on improving conditions around the world, then companies wouldn't be able to go offshore to pay low wages in those third world places. Why don't we work on that? They go to China for low wages. Unless we address that issue, this is not going to change, writes Adam. And Gray writes this, trickle down doesn't work no matter how many times she says it will. Peter writes, Rob, the Trump administration woman, the Trump-loving woman you had on earlier in your show was wrong about almost everything discussed. She neglects to mention that at the beginning of Obama's term, the U.S. economy was on the brink of depression. It was far more difficult to turn the stock market around in 2009 than to have it rise in 2017. And cutting taxes the GOP way has never had positive economic results for anyone other than the very rich. That's a Peter in Tampa. Let's go back to the phones. You're listening to 88.5 FM discussing the tax plan that's moving through Congress on its way to the U.S. Senate for a vote. Hi, John in Port Richey. What would you like to say?
Hey, thanks for the show. About the tax plan, I like the individual deduction, doubling that. I think that's going to help the economy more than giving the tax cuts to the corporation. Also, I don't have a problem, too much of a problem, with lowering the tax rate for the corporations. If you do something like just wipe out all the deductions and start all over and give them some basic deductions, like something that's capital improvement to force them to put money back into their company, write off the salaries of the workers, write off the health care costs. You know, you could probably get it down to put it on one page, as they say. Five deductions, that's all you get, 10 deductions at most. I think that would do a lot better. I'd like to know the information she said about after Reagan and how that added. I didn't quite understand that, but I'd like to know where that data comes from. And about your guest, she hit on all the great Republican talking points. She sounded really good. And her last comment just blew me away when she was talking about how the Democrats force the ACA down the throats of the American voters. So I'd like to ask the conservative listeners, because my idea of forcing it down your throat, it must be different than hers, because they did dozens of committee hearings. They've had over 100 Republican amendments to it. They released the plan during the debate, so people had time to look at the individual parts of it. When it was done, they released it in enough time for the people to look at it, for the CBO to score it. They had to get 60 votes to pass it in the Senate. Where the Republicans' health care plan, they did it behind closed doors with a handful of senators. I think they had one committee meeting. They wanted to release it on a Monday, so to speak, and vote on it by a Friday. They didn't want it out there for people to see. They didn't want the CBO to score it. Now, to me, that sounds like it's trying to ram it down our throats.
Good points, John, and I'll add one more thing to it. The tax plan that's making its way through the Congress is the same thing, that they have not had a public hearing on it, and I think they owe it to the public to slow it down, and let's take a look at what actually is going to happen with this tax plan, because I think it's going through way too fast.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, John, you make good points. Let's go to DeAndre in Tampa. Hi, DeAndre, you're on. What would you like to say?
I just wanted to say that, you know, people have to be very suspicious of Florida and a lot of the activity that's taking place around and about, because it's almost like a test case for a lot of what's going on nationally. Okay, we talk about forcing things down people's throat. I mean, you get on a local county and then state basis. Hello?
Yeah, you're still there.
Okay. Yeah, you get down to a local basis on a lot of things, just like one of your guests from now, maybe a few months back, explained in New Orleans and Louisiana, saying, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
And DeAndre, I don't mean to cut you off, but let's stick with taxes today, if that's okay. And you make good points. New Orleans was a test case for some pretty frightening examples of privatization and other things. But let's stick to taxes today, if you don't mind. And I'm going to move on to some other calls. And when we're talking about test cases,
okay.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
We'll do that topic later on, I promise.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, great to hear from you. Let's go to Duncan in Arcadia. Hi, Duncan. What do you think of the tax plan making its way through Congress?
Yeah, well, I think it's wrong, and I think they, like everybody else says, they did it behind closed doors, and they're trying to ram it down our throats. I really believe in a flat tax. I think everybody should pay the same tax and get rid of all the deductions. This way, a company making billions will pay 15%, and a man making 10,000 will make, say, 15%.
All right. Well, I
think it'd be fair.
Yeah, and they have not introduced a flat tax. I know a lot of libertarians and Republicans like that. Maybe if it comes up again, we'll do it. I've done many shows on the flat tax in the past. So, Duncan, thanks a lot for calling in, and thanks for making the point. It's something that I think one liberal was in favor of a flat tax years ago. Jerry Brown, when he ran for president in 1988, was in favor of a flat tax. But I think that was the last liberal that liked the idea. Cynthia writes this, why is she smiling? Because I don't see companies bringing jobs back for higher wages. It'll go offshore to banks and shareholders. My husband and I make about $30,000 a year, writes Cynthia. And she says, I'm pretty sure we'll pay more out of our small annual income. Paul writes this regarding the guest from the RNC. Paul says, this gal is hilarious, just aping the Ayn Rand rhetoric, pie in the sky wish list. That's Paul who's in Clearwater. And Edward writes this. He's in Largo, and he says, trickle down, trickle down, trickle down. That's the only avenue I hear this lady talking about to help lower the middle class people. It's never worked in the past. It's foolish to think that it will work this time. She touts the GDP growth as our savior. Robert Kennedy made the comment concerning GDP. It measures everything except that which makes life worthwhile. And that's part of Ed's message from Largo. And let's go to Rob, who's in Lutz. Rob, we just have 30 seconds. What would you like to say?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Yes, I'm 73 years old. I like the tax laws the way it is because it gives me more deductions every year as a senior. And the only thing that trickles down, Rob, is doo-doo there. You did not have to use
okay.
the dump button.
All right. All right. Thanks, Rob and Lutz. Thanks a lot for calling in. Jeffrey writes this. Mnuchin just gave a talk to a room full of CEOs, and he asked who will invest more with the new money from the proposed tax cuts. And Jeffrey writes, virtually no one raised their hands. I'm going to have to look that up. I have not seen that yet. We'll have to double check that. And then 863 writes, no, that's not for us. And Bowen writes this, your guest is delusional. The corporate biggies will buy a bigger yacht, bigger plane. I will continue to fight for minimum wage and pay raises. This tax plan is only for the rich, writes Bowen. Well, if you want to comment about anything you've heard here the past hour, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment about this show on extension 115. I'll play the comments back coming up on Monday at 11 a.m. Stay tuned for Daniel Ruth. He's coming up next. This is WMNF.